Well, it's been a joy to be with you since Thursday, and of course Dottie left for Haiti on Tuesday the 8th, and I came in on the 9th, and so she's doing well. Had 3 phone conversations with her and many texts, and so from what she can say in the text, she's doing a lot of work with the children at the Jubilee School and face painting and arm painting and maybe some art projects and chalk drawings and all that. So she sends her love to you all. And I want to thank you for all your kindness to me and while we've been here and taking me out and seeing violent movies and different things. And lovely breakfasts and lunch and dinners. So the two brothers mentioned the idea of the prison and some thoughts about that. And just before I left on this trip, I got a letter from a person in prison, and he's in Arizona, and I'd like to read you his letter. It's pretty touching, and I'll have to take off my glasses to see the print, but rejoice with me as I read this to you. He has the last name of somebody in this room, but I won't mention who it is. His name's Gary. Dear John, I am a follower, a disciple of our Lord Jesus Christ, in the custody of the state of Arizona, and a servant of Jesus Christ. I am also a part of a growing number of my fellow prisoners who are searching together and learning to practice our faith in a community of people who have been discarded and even demonized by the world, and more often than not, disregarded and disenfranchised by the traditional church. Every man in our community has once committed a sexual offense and are therefore regarded by the world and most professing Christians, church leaders, and the Christian media as either modern-day lepers or the monsters among us. We do have a few area churches sending volunteers to conduct various Bible studies and Protestant services. However, such ministries are mostly ineffective. They follow a traditional church model, e.g. one speaker, many listeners, and focus more on making converts by persuading people to invite Jesus into their heart rather than believing the gospel and following Christ in obedience and faith. Consequently, we have several, quote, converts who have little or no interest to follow Christ, but only a few disciples. A few of the disciples obtain copies of Pagan Christianity and Reimagining Church and are giving up the organized services in favor of assembling together at various times and places throughout the week to search the scriptures together and to begin practicing our faith by following Christ, serving and loving one another, and being Jesus to our neighbors rather than attempting to preach Jesus at them. In reading Pagan Christianity and Reimagining Church, I noticed many notes referencing searching together and obtained your address from one of my friends outside. I have 2 requests. First, how can we obtain a subscription to Searching Together? Most of us are working in prison, but average only about $8 to $10 a week. Depending on the cost, several may come together to share a subscription. Of course, I gave him a free one. He doesn't have to worry about that. Second, while many of us are studying and growing in our faith, someone from outside is needed to help us with oversight and to help us grow. Do you have any contacts in the Phoenix or Tucson area who may be willing to help? We also need to develop a network of like-minded believers outside who are open to developing relationships with men inside, so that when those inside go outside, are released, they may continue in the fellowship of the saints. Please pray for us, and especially for me, as I continue developing the gifts I have. I work as a facilitator tutor in the prison sex offender education treatment program and as a peer addiction recovery coach. I live and work among the broken pieces and am gathering as many as I find so that no one remains be lost. In his grace, for his glory, Gary. That was very encouraging to me. I needed that when it came, because I was sort of down, up to that point. But this really lifted up my heart. But anyway, that's encouraging. You just don't know all the things that are going on in different places, and the Lord is able to reach people that are unknown to us, but known to Him. And what I just read sort of ties in with what I want to talk about tonight. And Nathan has a story to share a little later too that fits right in with what I'd like to talk to you about. And as usual, the subjects that we tackle sometimes are defy definition. They defy formulas. They defy, putting things in a box. So, you know, in that sense, they're sort of slippery because they're more caught than taught. Reverse that. they're more caught than taught. Right, that's right. So bear with me as I just try to share some thoughts with you, and then we'll open it up for open discussion. And so I'd like to talk to you, you know, about an aspect of what I mentioned last time we were here about Bethany being a place where Jesus is welcome. And, of course, that has, you know, many ramifications. And one of them, which isn't so much probably stated in the Gospels, but certainly I think you'd agree with me, it's implied in all the things that went on in Bethany, and that would be the idea of Bethany being a safe place. And as you know, Jesus never spent a night in Jerusalem. He always left Jerusalem and went out to Bethany, a couple of miles from Jerusalem, and stayed there. And we know that, of course, as Frank points out in his book, that Bethany was a place that had many things occur in it, you know, and that he had... And two of the things that occurred, of course, were death and resurrection. And I'd just like to share some thoughts with you all to consider about you personally being a safe place, and then you as a group being a safe place. And just put out some things on the table, and then you can we can chew on it together. So just to sort of take a step back, Eldridge. John Eldridge, in his book Epic, makes some statements about our fundamental being that I think capture, you know, some important perspectives, and I'm going to read that to you here. He says, how wonderful to discover that God has never been alone. He has always been Father, Son, and Spirit. God has always been a fellowship. The whole story began with something relational. Reality is relational to its core. Whatever else it means to be human, we know beyond doubt that it means to be relational. One of the deepest of all human longings is the longing to belong, to be part of things, to be invited in. We are relational to the core. From this fellowship spring all of our longings for a friend, a family, a fellowship, for some place to belong. So that, I think that pretty much captures the essence of us. And working that all out, of course, is an ongoing lifetime task. But part of this relationalness that is what we are, is this idea of being a safe person and a safe community. A couple of years ago, I found two cassettes out of a three-set by Henry Nouwen on the Prodigal Son, and tape one was missing, and so we threw tape number two in our Subaru that has a, would you believe it, has a cassette player in it. Sorry. And so right away, Henry starts off by talking about a safe place. And I'd like to read this to you. It's a little long, but I think the thoughts are profound, and they're worth thinking about. And so this is primarily about us as individuals being safe people, or to put it another way, some reasons why we don't feel safe ourselves. In other words, our insecurities, our fears, and how we need to move toward feeling safe. And of course, this is a huge topic, but it's one that certainly affected me when I read it, because these are things that many people never think about. And yet it's the effects of this are going on in their life, but they don't understand why this is going on. I think this answers it pretty much, at least in capsule form. So just listen to what Henry says listen to it and let it affect you as it should. So he says, what I'd like you to think about is that it is very, very important to feel safe. And one of the things that I'm more and more aware of is how important it is for you, for me, for us to have a safe place. Where can you really be safe? Somehow the spiritual journey is a journey that requires that we have a deep, deep sense of safety. We are afraid precisely because we do not really feel safe. And for me, one of the most important questions is, where am I safe? With whom am I safe? Where can I let myself be known in a safe way? And there are always limitations, it seems. Yes, it is safe, but there is still this or that that makes it unsafe. And I do hope that you discover more and more where it's safe for you. We have to start discovering that safety with each other, in nature, you have to discover that safety in the physical space where you are. You have to discover that safety in prayer, and you have to discover that safety with God. And you will discover, the more you reflect on your life, how afraid you are. And it can sometimes be just the building that scares you, or it can be the water that makes you afraid, or the clouds, or a certain person that scares you. Not that he or she is not nice or not friendly, but you feel uncomfortable. And it comes from a place you don't even understand. Why am I a little scared to talk to that person? Why am I afraid I might say the wrong thing? And you discover you are not safe there. And sometimes, even with God, you don't feel safe. A little bit here, a little bit there, but not really feeling safe all the time. And my deepest conviction is that once you have a place where you are safe, that is the place you can always return to. But if you don't have a safe place to return to, all of your life becomes scary because you never know where to go back to. And so I think it is very important for me that you feel comfortable with me, for instance, because then you can let some of your things come up that you usually keep hidden. You can reveal them to yourself and let them flow and discover you won't be destroyed by your own fears. And what I want to do in this series on the prodigal son is to give you an image of safety, a return to the place where it is safe. And probably the most useful word for that is womb, the womb of God. That's the safest place. A lot of us were not even safe in the womb because our mothers were sometimes also afraid. And somehow there is no human being who hasn't experienced very early on the fears of those around him or her. We carry that in our lives. The spiritual life is to discover that there is safety for us and that God wants to offer us that safe place where we can dwell and where we can return to. And then we can let our whole body, mind, and heart sort of stay without fear. And I am really convinced that in order to be strong, to take risks, to do new things, we have to be able to be totally safe somewhere where we can return to. I think he's touching on a lot of stuff there. And I'll be honest with you, I hadn't even thought of all this until I read this a couple of years ago, and you know, it really really impacted me. But I think he's touching on things that us as human beings and redeemed human beings, you know, wrestle with, even though we may not objectify it. And every one of us has had fears, and we in a lot of cases we don't even know why we're afraid, you know. And that's what he's getting at, is that some of it, sometimes a lot of it, is that we don't have a safe place. Maybe we've never experienced a safe place. Maybe we've always been running, as it were, or we're always hiding, or we're always afraid. And that affects our life and how we function. It's like some people are always looking over their shoulder. They're always afraid that you know, somebody's going to get them, or that somebody's going to hurt them or something. And so, you know, it's obviously all of this is often tied to fear. But safety casts the fear out, because it just can't exist when we feel safe. Obviously, we have to feel safe with Jesus and the Father. And again, even some of us in this room may have even struggled a lot with that. But hopefully we gain more and more a feeling of safety with the Lord, that he is with us. He's not against us. He's not our enemy. He's not, you know, looking down on us to whip us and knock us around and all that kind of stuff. But he loves us, and he's in us, and he cares for us. And that's our starting point of safety. We have to find that safety in him. And in a sense, we have to find that safety in him alone. However, we hopefully can also experience that safety with one another increasingly, and that we can grow in our feeling of safety in the presence of our friends in Christ, who can help us and support us and come alongside us when our fears come along, or the tough times in life come along. We have those that we feel safe with, and of course that's closely related to what we call support. We have people who can come around us to support us in the ups and downs of life, the challenges that we face as life goes on, which are inevitable. They cannot be avoided. And so, I don't want you to dwell on this right now, because it's not appropriate, but I hope maybe the Lord will take the words that Henry said and maybe help you think about them privately when you're before the Lord. But I just like us to sort of ask ourselves internally right now, am I a safe person? And I would feel pretty confident that those of us who are in this room have a level of safety, every one of you. I believe every one of you has grown over the years, and that right now, most of you in this room, if not all of you, are pretty safe people. And we'll talk a little more about what that means in a bit. But the point is, let's face it, there's a lot of you who, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, you weren't a safe person. You were just totally living in fear and maybe drifting and hiding and running. But the Lord has helped you over time to become a safe person. And that's really what we should be asking the Lord. Because again, I can't give you a formula. Here's how to be a safe person. That's just ridiculous. But every one of us can ask the Lord in light of, if this is true, if it's good for us to be safe, if it's good for us in this fallen world that's crazy, if it's good for us to be in the midst of all that darkness, to be safe people, if we ask him, Lord, help me to be a safe person. Help me to put aside those things that are areas where I'm not safe, and help me to grow in this whole area of safety. Because the more we can be safe ourselves, be a safe person, then obviously that's going to impact the community. Because when you have safe people coming together, then that creates an environment of safety where others who may come into that environment feel safe. And so... As an outgrowth of this idea of safety, then we need to think about, you might say, our service in the world. What are we here for? And obviously that could be answered in different ways, but the one way I'd like to think about right now would be the idea of becoming involved in a world that's hurting and lonely, and how we can come alongside people to be that safe person that they might come to confide in and share their hearts with and hopefully, you know, find the Lord. And so again, I'd like to bear with me as I read a smaller portion from Henry Nouwen. And this is what he said about helping people and ministering to people in this whole thing of being safe. And these are words that, again, have profoundly affected me. No one can help anyone without becoming involved, without entering with his whole person into the painful situation, without taking the risk of becoming hurt, wounded, or even destroyed in the process. The beginning and the end of all Christian service is to give your life for others. Who can take away suffering without entering it? The great illusion of leadership is to think that a person can be led out of the desert by someone who has never been there. So long as we define leadership in terms of being responsible for some kind of general good, we have forgotten that no God can save except a suffering God. Indeed, the paradox of Christian service is that the way out is the way in, that only by entering into communion with human suffering can relief be found. Personal concern makes it possible to experience that going after the lost sheep is really a service to those who were left alone. Now listen to this. Forgetting the many for the one is a sign of true service. And again, in our religious culture, what are we taught? We're taught that you reach the masses, the thousands, and you fill buildings with thousands of people. But the problem is, of course, is that the many lost sheep, the many drifters and all that, the single persons, the individuals, they're lost. Nobody cares about them. Nobody goes after them. And so I think he's right. Forgetting the many for the one is a true sign of service. And Nathan experienced that today, I think. That's a rub, isn't it? Because we can apply that both to people outside the body and people in the body. But the point is, how can we help if we don't get involved? How can we help if we don't enter the suffering and the pain and the issue that the person faces, the person we love faces, and being a, you know, being a safe person is part of that, because obviously people, you all know this by your own experience, people who aren't safe scare you. And there's that sort of trite saying, people who are hurt hurt others. And that, I think there's a lot of truth in that. And so we don't want to be a person that scares people away and that we scare them. We want there to be something inviting about us, something that's fresh and real and authentic, and that we can be safe. And the key to that, most of the time, is the fact that people see that you're going through the same struggles they are. That you've been there, like he was saying. You've been in the desert, so you can help somebody who's in the desert. And people who haven't been in the desert can't really help those who are in the desert. It's obviously a hypocrisy in a sense. So being a safe person is part of our being in this world. Why are we here? We're here to help those on the outside. As Paul says, do good to everybody, but especially those in the household of faith. So we're to give our attention especially to the body, but also even to those outside the body, to be a light, just like Nathan had experienced his experience today. And along this line, this is another area that Nouwen touches on that I think is significant, which is a little bit of a sidebar to what I'm talking about, but it's still, I think, relevant. And that is that in people's quest to be human, which is to be in relationship with others, we all know that, again, personally ourselves, we've been through this, and then we've seen other people around us in this this problem. And that is that all of us probably have been through screwed up relationships. And why is it that, well, this is just one of many illustrations, but why is it that so many women go back to abusive men? Again, there's economic reasons and all that, but the point is, though, there's a phenomenon where these women who have been mistreated hundreds of times in various levels of hurt still go back. And sometimes they leave that abusive person, but they turn around and choose another one. So the problem is that people, that what's happening, of course, is they're looking for love. They're looking for belonging. They're, what Eldridge was talking about, they're looking for real relationship. But as the song goes, you know, they're looking for love in all the wrong places. And that leads to one relationship upon another being totally worthless and useless and hurtful. And it just keeps adding up. But here's what Nouwen says, and I think you'll agree with his observation. Why do people keep switching partners and switching jobs and switching cars and switching, you know, they're always going after something. And he calls it the final solution. They're looking for a silver bullet that'll answer the issues of their life. So listen to what he says. Thus, we keep on hoping that one day we will find the man who really understands our experiences, the woman who can bring peace to our restless life, the job where we can fulfill our potentials, the book that will explain everything, and the place where we can feel at home. There's that safety issue. Such false hope leads us to make exhaustive demands and prepares us for bitterness and dangerous hostility when we start discovering that nobody and nothing can live up to our absolutistic expectations. And I think that helps us understand a lot of what's going on in our culture. And he wrote this in 1977, but it's still just as relevant and more, you know, even today. And I think that explains what's going on with so many people. You've all seen it, and probably to some degree experienced it yourself in your life. But people are just, they're seeking love, but it's a perverted love. They're seeking belonging, but it's a perverted belonging. And what happens is they pour all their expectations into that entity, a community, a lover, you know, whatever it is. And then when that entity lets them down, then they spiral into hurt. But within days, months, they're back into it again, looking for another silver bullet. You've all seen that pattern. So again, we, in the midst of this kind of phenomenon in our culture, what do they need to see? They need to see safe people. People that will come alongside them and help them in a way that is lifting them up, not tearing them down. And now I'd like to read you from now on, where he gets sort of to the heart of what it means to be a safe person. When we are free from the need to judge or condemn, we can become safe places for people to meet in vulnerability and take down the walls that separate them. When people realize that we have no hidden agendas or unspoken intentions, that we are not trying to gain any profit for ourselves, that our only desire is peace and reconciliation, they may find the inner freedom and courage to leave their guns at the door and enter into conversation with their enemies. Many times that happens even when without our planning. Our service of reconciliation most often takes place when we ourselves are least aware of it. Our simple, non-judgmental presence does it. So that there's many aspects that could be talked about, but that one I think is enough to keep us busy. And that's something, again, we all struggle with at various levels. That is, you know, becoming a non-judgmental, non-condemning person. And again, some of us have grown up probably being condemned and judged, and often then you go out and you do the same thing to other people. But when we talk about being a safe person, then certainly non-judgmentalism and non-condemning is right at the core of what it means to be a safe person. And I want you to think about this for a minute. Again, it's a huge subject, but this is one that is worth thinking about. Here Jesus is the most, you know, holy person that could be. He's without sin. And he comes down to this earth, in a fallen earth. And where does he hang out? He hangs out with all the scum of the culture. He hangs out with all the sinners. And so this is the question we need to ask ourselves. Why is it that all these people that were wallowing in issues like the woman at the well with her multiple relationships, etc., what made them feel comfortable around Jesus? Why did those people come around him? Why did they want to invite him into their house to eat? You would think that around such a holy person who had never sinned, now they may not have understood that, but the point is that's what he was. Why did they feel comfortable coming near him and listening to him? And I think a huge part of it is that Jesus did not go around condemning people. He didn't go around throwing out judgments on them. He didn't want them to grovel. He was kind to them. He listened to them. He was a safe person. They loved being around him. And that's the spirit of what I hope all of us can come to. Jesus is in us, and we should ask Jesus to help us be a safe person, that where people will, you know, as it were, be attracted to us because of Jesus in us, and they will see, as Nouwen put it, something happens and you don't even think about it. You're not even aware of it. You're not planning it. But your non-judgmental stance and posture does something with people. I'll bet you some of you could testify of how you've seen that. I know Dottie and I have in our running into different people along the way. There's this one incident that happened on an airplane years ago with this particular brother we know, who you might say has, I would say he has a gift of some discernment in this area of human, you know, what's going on in a human. And so he's on the airplane, and the stewardess comes by and offers him a drink or something, and he notices her. And then when she comes by again, this way, he looked her in the eye and he said, "Who hurt you?" And she went back where she makes the coffee and everything, and she started crying, and she came back and tapped him on the shoulder and just went like this, and he came back and in that area there and started talking with her, and she broke down and said, you know, that she had been mistreated by a man and all that, and he just listened to her and prayed with her, and that was pretty much it. But the point is, see, all he did was say, "Who hurt you?" But he'd sensed there's something there, and that opened up a time of the Lord. And so I'm sure all of you could testify if things like that have happened to you. But I would hope that we would just maybe see a little more of that happening in our lives, where people that are just ready to slit their wrists are gravitated toward us, and they want to hear something, or they want to just, and again, it isn't so much talking, is it? Just listening to people breaks down hundreds of barriers, because most people don't listen to each other. They're not used to being heard. So when you just sit there and you listen to them and you empathize with them and you care about them, they just fall apart because they're not used to anything like that. And that's the kind of people we should want to be in Jesus. Now, applying this, you might say, corporately then, and again, a huge subject, but if we apply what each of us is to be as a safe person, then that should be also applied to the body. And so Paul talks about the atmosphere of the body of Christ in Romans 14 and 15, but especially 15. And so what does Paul say? He says, after he goes through the whole thing about meats and drinks and observing days and everything, and then what does he say? "Therefore, accept one another in Christ, just as Christ accepted you for the Father's sake." So the whole goal of Paul there was an accepting atmosphere where people don't feel judged and condemned and fearful. And then he goes on later to say in the same chapter, "Wherefore you are able also to admonish one another." So in other words, it's not an atmosphere of pervasive love where everybody just sort of, you might say, walks on eggshells and doesn't speak the truth, but rather it's a combination of love and truth speaking. But it's very clear that the love has to be the foundation of the truth speaking. If it isn't, you end up with a witch hunt. And so I believe it's wise for every group, as the Lord leads, you know, during a year, you know, to ask ourselves, how are we doing in our loving atmosphere? Would people feel comfortable coming in here, outsiders, feel comfortable coming in here? Would they feel judged or condemned? What do we sense? And Paul talks about how, you know, in chapter 14 of 1 Corinthians, when an unlearned or unbelieving person comes in your midst, they see what's going on and they fall down on their face and say, "God is in your midst." So why does that happen? Because they're seeing Christ come to expression through the body, and they know that this isn't man-made. This is not your Rotary Club. This is Christ coming to expression through his people, and they fall down and they just say, "God is in your midst." Again, there's no formula there. There's no nothing. It's just us being Christ and to one another and letting that impact people who are from the outside who may come in. So, I'll be honest with you, and I don't know what this means to this group, but don't take it as something I'm saying just to you, because just about every group, you know, that I've ever rubbed shoulders with, I would say the same thing to them. And that is, if we're honest with each other, do we have an atmosphere where everyone feels comfortable and safe sharing their heart? Does everyone feel comfortable, feel safe, expressing themselves maybe in areas where, you know, maybe where there may not be some agreement, or, you know, maybe a little controversial or something? And of course you have to have wisdom how you bring up certain things, but I'm just saying, to me, a big measuring stick about the atmosphere of a group is the safety level of everyone feeling that they can share their feelings without being condemned or judged, and that they can feel listened to, cared for, and loved. Now, again, that takes grace, it takes mercy from, you know, the Lord and all that, but when you boil it all down, it just seems like in most groups, there are times when people don't feel safe. Sometimes they feel like a few people, you know, sort of dominate the thing, and so they don't want to say anything that might cross those people. That's just one manifestation, but you know, this is something we really need to be honest with each other about. If you don't feel safe in this group sharing your heart, then there's something wrong. That needs to be prayed about, and not again to condemn each other or whatever, but our whole supposition is we're not interested in playing religious games. We're concerned about authenticity, reality, honesty. And again, those qualities are not easy, because it requires us to listen, to set aside our agendas, to put others ahead of ourselves, to esteem others more than ourselves, all these different things that Paul says. And that's a challenge for all of us. But I don't know how many times I've heard people tell me privately, I'd never share my heart in this group, because I know that certain people are going to condemn me, or, you know, or just are not going to like what I'm saying or whatever. So I just encourage you to think about the implications of that for this group. And don't think I'm just saying it to you. I've said it to just about every group. So, but it is a measuring stick, sort of, how this, if it feels safe, that's a good measuring stick. And I'll be honest with you, the most honest, authentic group I've ever seen was in 1984, when we visited this group, when we visited them 2 years in a row. I have never seen what I saw there, ever. Why did those people have so much reality and so much honesty and so much authenticity? And the only thing I can come up with is because they were cultivating relationships with each other outside their meetings, and they knew each other more and more deeply as the years rolled on. Now, there was something in this group that was probably different than most groups, and that is they all lived within a half a mile of each other. And there were a few exceptions, of course. They had, at their peak, they had 65 people, and then they split purposely. You know, that was part of their vision. And they split into true groups. But, I mean, they were still within, you know, everyone was still in proximity to each other. But anyway, that seemed to make a huge difference, you know, in their life together. But Dottie and I were just bowled over. You know, we were in their one of their corporate meetings, and we just couldn't believe how people were sharing their hearts on some things that were, you know, a little touchy or, you know, a little different. And it was like everybody just flowed with it and loved them, and, you know, and all that. And then we went to their New Year's Eve party, and it was just amazing. You know, you could just tell these people loved each other, and they listened to each other, and they cared for each other. And anyway, it was, it's just, it can happen, but it really requires us to seek the Lord together, and and we know these things are right. You know, we're not going to argue over what I've talked about. It's right, but the outworking of it is tough. And the only way it's going to happen is by us laying down our things and just looking to the Lord and asking him to work in every one of us the reality of Jesus Christ, which is honesty and authenticity. And that's, again, what people appreciated about Jesus. He wasn't phony. He wasn't condescending. He wasn't, you know, some holy man going around flinging out, you know, commandments, you know, and all that, and condemning people. No. And so I think if you meditate on why did sinners, gross sinners, you know, according to that first century definition, why did they flock to Jesus? Why does it say the common people received him while the religious leaders hated him? And I think it's because he just sat down with people. He could eat with anybody. He could openly talk with them. And you remember in the one part when the parents went away and left Jesus? It says he was talking to the religious guys, and it says he asked them questions. Isn't that interesting? It wasn't Jesus giving them a lecture. I'm sure he said some things, but the point is he asked them questions. So he was very conversational. And I think even the religious leaders had to be struck by, wow, this guy's really, you know, really different, because he's not like us quoting so-and-so, you know, to have authority when we talk. He was just a simple man with profound truth sharing himself with others. So I hope these thoughts will be helpful to you in whatever way the Lord intends. And I'll just open it up to you and ask you what's on your heart.
Mm-hmm. That even though there might be storms outside, kind of like being very much like the around a father that loves you so very much, in his life you feel the most safe. Mm-hmm.
Person, and then it didn't come. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, we withdraw or we lash out, mm-hmm. and all these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
But when we have an understanding that our fulfillment and our satisfaction is in Christ, and that we are living His life out, then we can be a safe person, because everything about me and my hopes is not bound up in how somebody else is going to treat me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm depending on the Lord, whether someone treats me nice or someone treats me terribly. So if I'm learning to live out of His life, I can respond in love, Demita was talking about, because I'm already confident and secure in the love relationship between Christ and me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's huge. And maybe it's almost something, like John said, is caught more than it's taught.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk about it, but it's really something that you just, I don't know, the Lord has to impart it to you, or mm-hmm. it has to become like a revelation. But mm-hmm. When we have that abiding in the Lord, then we can become a safe place, because we're not so dependent on our emotions and all that. We're dependent on the Lord's life.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a thought, and then I have a question. The thought I had was, you know, as far as how we can, you know, it's simple, like we can ask the Lord to, you know, when it comes to the sinners, the grossest of sinners, how to see Him and only those people.
Yeah.
And then also give us opportunities to experience that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, I want to love on that one that's more important than the 99, mm-hmm. but would you, you know, bring them across my path, or give me insight on, you know, where I can go to do that? You
mm-hmm.
know what I mean?
Because
other than it can, for one, you can be passive, or you can try to do it of your own strength. And so, the out of His life, like asking Him, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just this is a simple practical thing I want to bring up.
Right.
I guess my question would probably be a little more personal, but you know, maybe good insight for everybody. But like, would you say there's a balance to the, you know, that one, you know, being that safe place and sharing the Lord? Because I find for myself, like, right, bad company corrupts good morals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know He hung out with the grossest of sinners. And I've had experiences through my journey. Like, I remember working at Gainesville Fitness where I remember I would, you know, I was friendly with everybody that I worked with and all my members and stuff. But they, you know, a lot of the times they would just come into my office and want to just sit there and chat. And I had it was totally the Lord at that time or whatever, but I was able to see, like, one girl was, like, Buddhist, another guy was, like, Hindu or whatever, but, like, I was able to see just Christ and then share the Lord with them. Like, I didn't see the crap, you
mm-hmm.
know what I mean? I was able to just see our Lord and pull that out of Him, and I think that's why He could hang out with the gross sinners or whatever, grossest
mm-hmm.
sinners. But the thought that the question I have is, like, there's, like, the now, right? I have a coworker that sits by me, and he always, like, wants to talk, and he'll pour his heart out, and he does trust me, and he feels safe. But then there's, like, some coworkers always go to lunch, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't go, and this may just be personal, but, like they talk about gross things,
mm-hmm.
or, like, it's just it's a more immoral, like, just more fleshly environment.
Yep. Right.
And that affects me, and that
yep.
influences me.
Yep.
So would you say there's a balance in, like, guarding your heart and not, like, you know, because I feel like there's a balance, and there's no perfect answer, I would
right.
assume, but and
right.
different for every situation. But
yeah,
does that make sense?
Yeah, that's a superb question that we probably all faced. Obviously, we just from a practical standpoint, we know that all of our life experiences lead us to various sensitivities and things. So we do have to certainly guard our our hearts, we have to use wisdom, because, you know, if we've struggled with drinking in the past, it probably might be wise to just go into bars and try to stir up conversations with people. Not to say that some who have had a drinking problem can't do that, but just generally, you'd have to be real careful about something. So those are just things that you think about, of course. But again, I think that you'd agree with me that the evangelical subculture has basically insulated itself from sinners. So there's most believers don't have any unbelieving friends. They're basically just a ghetto. So we don't want that. But each person has to be clear that some relationships with unbelievers could easily lead you into bad situations, but others, of course, won't. You could go a long ways with them and never worry about being tempted in a bad way. So those are things that just you have to have discernment on. Yeah. So there is no easy answer, but we have to guard our hearts. And sometimes, of course, we could rationalize and say, oh, well, it won't be bad if I go in here just once or something, and maybe, you know, you stumble. So you got to probably err on the side of where you know your weaknesses are, and don't be naive, and don't rationalize. But on the other hand, we shouldn't use that mindset as an excuse for not rubbing shoulders with people that are outside the fence, you might say. So we don't want to guard or put a fence around the body of Christ so we don't touch anybody outside. But on the other hand, we can't just carte blanche say, oh yeah, just do anything you want with them, everything will be fine. No, of course not. But I would say we err too much on the side of fencing ourselves rather than reaching out. So we probably have to do some thinking about that. But each person has their struggles, you know. Yeah. I can go in a bar, you know, it doesn't mean anything to me. I've never had a drinking problem or anything, but other people, they're not like that. So I'm not everybody, and everybody's not me.
Yeah.
So what you can go into, I can't. What you can, you know, that's just the way it is. And again, we shouldn't judge each other about these things. So if somebody does something we don't feel comfortable with, we shouldn't impose that on them and say, well, they shouldn't be doing that. Well, if you're concerned about it, you could talk with them about it, but don't just judge them and say, well, they shouldn't do that. But if you, certainly we could talk to each other and maybe warn each other, because we could be capable of a blind spot, you know, and maybe we need to hear the wisdom of somebody else. You know, you sure, brother, you ought to be doing that? You know, so you evaluate it. But that's a huge question you're asking, and it's very very practical, and there's no box answer on that one.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of like, I mean, Jesus sent them out two by two, and that pattern was followed all throughout Paul, Peter, I mean, even we see Peter, oh, well, John was with him, or his other disciples. I mean, they were not that, you know, oh, the only time I can ever, whatever, minister to someone is with them with two people, but just in that context, you know, as Nathan's sharing, just to stay on that context, just sharing it with another brother and say, hey man, you know, would you pray that the Lord would open doors, or there's a door over here with this guy? And even just saying, hey man, I want to take this guy out to lunch, can you meet me? Or, you know what I mean, just like seeing it as, like you said, it's not necessarily we all do it all the time all at once, but just as the two or three are going, you know, and just to even like partner with one another when we meet somebody, because sometimes these needs of people we meet are so great, and sometimes like it can be like say it could be like I have an encounter with a waitress or something. It's like I'm married, but I want you to meet my wife because she, you know, she can speak into that. And I just think of that like that's kind of where I see like the body when we meet that Samaritan woman. Like it could just be like, oh man, you know, I know you're really going to dig this brother in the church because you guys are into the same thing. And it's just like what you're saying about kind of like building relationships and just meeting people where they're at, whether they have a need or whether there's just they're open. You know,
right.
And I see that as how that same principle is that we're not alone. Like Nathan's not alone at work. You know, like even if people aren't there present, like, you know, if we share our experiences with other people in the church, then people, we all can come alongside each other. You know?
Right. There was a case in the South where, which was to me very illustrates a lot of the problems we face, is that this one brother who's like in his 60s was driving around his town, and he would pick up his granddaughter at a certain time and all. And so anyway, on the route that he was where he was picking up his granddaughter, he noticed this woman was hanging out, you know, in the open street there, pretty where most times when he came to get his granddaughter. Well, anyway, he felt the Lord tell him, help her. Well, you know, first couple of times he just resisted it, you know, and but then finally, probably the fourth or fifth time, he took his granddaughter home or wherever, and then he came back, and he stirred up a conversation with her, and so it turned out, of course, she was, you know, basically offering her body for money, and anyway, he called his wife and told her what was going on, and he ended up taking her. She was basically homeless at that time, so anyway, he ended up taking her to a motel and getting her a room, paid for the room, and then he left her there and said, "I'm going to go get some women to come and help you." Well, his wife was willing, but the sad thing is the body wasn't willing to help. Nobody in the a small body is probably like 15 people, but nobody in the body would women would come alongside that woman. And he ended up having to do a few things himself that he didn't feel comfortable doing, but he felt he had to do it. But anyway, that's just an illustration of how we have this mindset, you know, that you don't touch the unclean thing. Well, my goodness. You know, so anyway, it ended up where the woman ended up going back to some other place where probably her pimp was or something, and, you know, she just went away. But he tried. He did what he could. He obeyed the voice of the Lord, but he just didn't get any support, right. You know. And obviously, as a man, there were certain things he just couldn't do. And anyway, but that's sad. So I think we need to be careful that we don't lose opportunities in the name of, you know, touch not the unclean thing. I mean, come on, you know, going to see a lady in a motel room and trying to help her, you're not going to be defiled by that, you know. So anyway, those are things that are tough.
But the pastor of the church could go by and they could see you do that, and they could go, "Oh, look at that brother."
Yeah, look at that. Yeah. Sin. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wanting to feel like you have a place or you're valuable to me, or like, I'm not saying it's your motivation, I'm saying at the time that was my motivation. But when it more changed from like an asking to just being open and available whenever. And I don't think that, you know, when the Lord is going to do something, He's already pre-planned the works that we would do. And I think just having an open heart and an open spirit about, like, if the Lord asks you to do something, then you do it. Because He's going to put that in your path. He's already put out the works He wants you to do. I think it's about, not about asking the Lord, "Hey, can I do this for you?" Just being open that when He does ask, you do say yes.
Yep.
And I've seen so much more fruit when I was just open and flexible than when I was trying. Or even
right.
By being. Being,
mm-hmm.
being all
right.
That. You
right.
don't have to do that. This is, you know, you believe in organic church, the Lord just will totally be organic and work like that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
We could ask the Lord to make us aware.
Right.
Yeah. There's definitely wisdom. Yeah, same page. That's good.
I had an experience 6 or 7 years ago where we had a retail bookstore on the street in a little town, and I was closing about 5 o'clock, and this 50-year-old man came walking in, and
he looked around at the books, and I said, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Well, I don't know." And I said, "Well, what are you looking for?" He said, "Well, actually," he said, "I'm looking for a Playboy." And I said, "Well, we don't carry that." And then he said, "Well, what else do you have?" And I said, "Well, we've got some, you know, books about the Lord and
Searching Together.
You know what and what."
Searching Together.
Yeah, well.
It's subscription based.
Yeah, right. There you go. Here's a card. Fill it out. Yep. Yeah. Searching Together is your silver bullet that you've been looking for. So, anyway, so I think he lied to me and said that he wanted to get a book for his niece, who was having a birthday or something, but I really think he wanted it for himself, but he didn't want to say that. So I pulled down John Stott's Basic Christianity, you know, and a little book, and I said, "Well, how about this?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll take that." So we go up to the cash register, and I'm ringing it up and all, and he says, out of the blue, you know, he says, "Was Moses before Christ or after Christ?" And I said, "Moses was way before Christ." And then he said, "How did the Old Testament come into being?" And I said, "Well, that's a big question." But I just gave him a quick little answer, you know. And he paid for the book and walked out. So that's why I think he wanted the book for himself, not for his niece. But anyway, the point is, if I would have got all uptight when he said he wanted a Playboy, you know, that would have ruined the whole thing. But that didn't faze me. I just, you know, rode with the punch and wanted to just talk with him, you know. And so those are the kind of, we have to get rid of that, you know, getting uptight about the things that worldly people will say. I mean, you guys all know probably better than I do how people can talk and all that. And like you say, they go to lunch and talk about filthy things and all that. So, okay. But we shouldn't let those things deter us from trying to help people. And again, if we're safe people, they might be drawn to us and, you know, and they just want to talk to us even though they know we're different, but they feel comfortable with us. And they don't know why, but maybe they can learn why. Other comments?
One quick question. Is that a good book for people who don't know the word Basic Christianity?
Yeah, it's probably not the first one I'd recommend, but it's probably number three. Okay. to put it bluntly.
So what's number one, bro?
Yeah. Well, you're catching me off guard.
You knew pretty quickly that was number
three. Yeah. I knew that, right. Yeah. The thing about Stott is that he's a little on the cerebral side, and he doesn't, it's not, I would prefer more of a narrative, you know, looking at the picture of Christ and the eternal purpose and putting things in that perspective, which really there's not a lot of in terms of smaller bites to give somebody. So, I mean, to me, from eternity to here would be my first choice, but that's too big for most. I mean, that guy that came in the store, that's a little big for him. But if there's anything smaller, well, like the Epic by John Eldridge, that's pretty good. That's a small chunk. And
it's Epic.
It's just the Epic. Called,
yeah.
The Epic.
Okay. Yeah. Mhm. Anyway, so. Think about your own journey and the people that have impacted you the most that maybe accelerated your growth. And I'll bet you every one of them was a safe person, somebody that you felt comfortable with, somebody you were drawn to, and somebody you pretty much figured wouldn't condemn you if you asked a certain question or shared a certain fear that you had. And I know I had that in my, right when I became a believer in 65, I had a Frank Hall. And Frank Hall sort of came alongside of me. And I was going to Cal State at Northridge at the time. And I was getting a lot of, you know, gobbledygook from the from the humanism and everything. And Frank just sat there. We sat in his Ford station wagon for hours at night, and I would ask him my questions, you know, and he just patiently answered as best he could. And, I mean, the Lord put him in my life at that point, and I needed him. And Frank, you know, was a precious person. So anyway, we all have people like that that are very significant in our journey that the Lord put there. But the thing about Frank was he was approachable, he was humble, and he listened, and he cared, and he was available. And we all have people like that, I hope, in your life. And like with Dottie, it was her grandmother. You know, grandmother was Jesus to her in a context that was pretty, you know, not so good. So, yeah, we should be thankful for the angels, as it were, the Lord sends into our life and helps us along our journey.
Yeah, I just want to bring up a lot of the themes tonight, like, kind of really hit me where I'm really walking through right now, but, you know, what I've been walking through the last couple of years that I've been here. You know, I was, when I came here, it was just under 3 years ago. You know, I was that gross sinner. You know, I didn't know the Lord. I didn't know life. I didn't, you know, I had a horrible sense of reality. And I'm sure I've testified to this many times, but, you know, when I came down here, you know, what it was that got me when the Lord revealed himself to me, you know, was the love and the safety of the church here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the people, you know, I've never seen anything like it. You know, most people haven't. It was so unique to me and so different. You know, and it broke through many of those walls, and, you know, the Lord brought specific brothers, and Nathan especially, you know, he's been there since day one, really, beside me of this, you know, these people I've never met in my life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, just brought that safety. And I remember some of the first words Nathan said is, "This is your Bethany, this church, these people, if you just come in and you jump in and accept this as your home, this is your Bethany, this is your resting place."
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this place has been. You know, I came here, and it's weird. My situation is really different, and it's made it hard, you know, through my journey. But it's also made it easy to just have to fully trust in the Lord. You know, when I moved down here, I left Ohio because I had issues with the law. And, you know, I was on probation and, you know, drug addict, and I just couldn't get out of it. You know, I've talked to you about this before. And, you know, instead of killing myself, I came here. It was, you know, I say it was the Lord. The first time I ever heard the Lord's voice, I believe, you know, that I can remember, was just, no, don't kill yourself. Just go to Florida. Go to Mike Kesselring. You know, I grew up with him in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And, you know, obviously, the rest is history. But lately, you know, I mean, since I've been here, you guys have walked through a lot with me, you know. Everything with Hannah, you know, the marriage and moving and then coming back and, you know, a lot of things haven't made sense to me, and, you know, it's been difficult. There's been a lot of confusion, a lot of not understanding, but it's just, the Lord has just been so great, and the brothers and sisters here have just been amazing, that, you know, somebody like me wouldn't have made it, you know, mm-hmm. somebody without the Lord, without the safety of this church wouldn't have made it, and the reason I'm bringing this up now is because it has been on my heart, and, you know, through other brothers here in the church, to go back to Ohio and deal with that past once and for all. It has been a burden. It has kept me from getting jobs. It has kept me from having a peace of mind. It has kept fears within me and nightmares in my dreams. And it's been cool because I've wanted to do it since I've been here. You know, there's been times where I'm like, I should just go. I should just go do this. And the wisdom of brothers is like, no, it's not the right time. Let's pray. Let's do this. And you're just trying to scapegoat. You know, you're just trying to run back to that. And it's probably true. If I would have gone up there, I could have fell back into the same things I was doing. And so it's been a cool journey with that. But right now, you know, I strongly feel like it's time for whatever reason. Whether it's the Lord strengthened me, whether it's there's just a specific reason for this timing. So yeah, for me, the plan is the end of next month, end of March, to head up there and face that. that would be me going in front of the judge, turning myself in for my warrant. And my possibility of the time I could face is 3.5 years, and potentially more if they charge me with fleeing the state. It's been cool because, you know, obviously with something like that, most people, in a normal person, you know, that brings fear. Like, oh, I don't want to go spend that time in jail. I don't want to do this and that. But when you're talking about safety and you're talking about not having to have fear, it's an acceptance that this is not my life. It's not my life. Mm-hmm. It's Christ. You know, it's his life. And that wherever he has me, you know, that I've learned from my experience, wherever he has me, there is life in it. You know, and there can be joy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, that's my journey right now. It's definitely a battle. I mean, every day, you know, some days I feel great, I'm excited, and like, let's go. And some days, mm-hmm. like, man, I really don't want to go to jail. I don't want to do this. How can we do this? And so, you know, I'm bringing this up now because, you know, it's a month and a half, and I need this safety. I need the safety of the church here. You know, I've been through a lot. My biggest fear for returning has been returning to that old man, you know, returning to that old self. You know, I've told myself in the past that Ohio is like my hell. You know, that was the place where I was at my lowest. Mm. You know, I did horrible things, and I was not who I am today. And so my thought is returning up there is returning to that person, and I don't believe that to be true. So
that person is dead, Josh.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So then that's why I need you guys, and you know, that's why I bring this here. And you know, I've got brothers that I've been walking with in this and having encouraging, you know, thoughts. And so, yeah, I look forward to spending the next month and a half with you guys. And my hope, and I don't know what the Lord has, but, you know, this may be a season. It may be a year, maybe 2-3 years. I don't know, less. But my hope is to return here and continue in fellowship with you guys. So.
Would you, I don't know the ins and the outs, but would you be like retaining an attorney to at least when you... turn yourself in like and stuff like that, because it seems like it would be good to have some legal representation.
Yeah.
In that circumstance that you're describing.
Yeah, well, the Lord is so good. One of mine and Mike's best friends growing up, Zach Bias, some of you guys may have met him, he came down here a couple years ago. He just got his law degree recently and passed the bar and everything. He's working for a firm up in Ohio.
Mm.
I contacted him, said, hey, I'm finally going to come up and deal with this. You know, he knows me well. We know a lot about each other. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, he started asking questions because he's not a criminal attorney by any means, but he knows people that is. And he's already been working it. He's looked at both my cases. He's kind of given me, like, this is what they're probably going to do. This is what my criminal attorneys are saying may happen. And so he's willing to, you know, stand for me. And
mm-hmm.
So that would, and pretty much he would, from there, go to the judge, go to the prosecutors and say, hey, he's coming to turn himself in. What's it going to look like?
Right.
What do you guys want? Do you want to put him in jail? Do you want to put him back on probation? What's this going to be like? So that was, you know, that was a blessing.
Yeah.
Because I think for me, as much as I don't need it, it would be nice to actually kind of know what I'm walking into.
Yep.
Ahead of time. So.
Yep.
Well, I just want to share this picture I got of you going, just going back. I'm just kidding when you're sharing. There is this YouTube video I watched one time of this guy. He does a lot of stuff for like homeless people and like buys them like apartments and furnishes them and pays the rent and stuff like that. Really neat stuff. But I might get emotional because it was powerful. I cry every time. But this gentleman was an alcoholic or whatever, and he didn't say he got saved or anything in the video, right? But he brought him off the street, and he had like raggedy clothes, long hair, big old beard, and like it was like that self-fulfilling prophecy, it seemed like, in the video. Like, that's just how he saw himself, so that's what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so this guy buys him, like, he obviously bathes, and he takes him to this like where they cut his hair. They bought him like a couple $1,000 suit and shaved his face and everything. And then they had this big mirror.
Mm-hmm.
And
big what?
This big mirror.
Mm.
And mm-hmm. he had to look at himself in the mirror.
Mm.
And he started crying.
Mm.
And because he had saw himself as something else for so long. But in light of what I kind of shared with you, essentially going back, you're going to look in the mirror and you're going to have to face things. But I've experienced the Lord allowing me to go back to Colorado and redeeming that land and seeing who I really am. And I just see you going and looking in a mirror, but instead of seeing who you always seen yourself to be, which has kept you in bondage, that revelation, being revealed to you while you're out there. Mm-hmm. And causing a beautiful, brilliant liberty, brother. Mm-hmm. I just know that's going to happen for you, man, and I'm excited for you, brother. Mm-hmm. Very proud of you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, does anybody have questions first, though?
That Josh got me. It's like a little thing that shows pictures in the daily scripture, and it's so funny. The first 2 days of this year were like totally legalistic. They were like, "You will never measure up to the law." And I was like, "All right, let's start it here." Holy crap! But the one for Friday was a picture of this like Arizona, and it was like luscious green, though. It was gorgeous and different colors, and the sun was rising, and it said it was a quoting from one of the scriptures, I can't remember, but it was talking about how in the kingdom every tribe from every nation are sitting before the throne, calling him holy, and they are all clothed in white garments.
Goes to jail for courage and freedom. Mm. That could only be the Lord's
So his mark is on it.
That's cool.
When you mentioned coming back to Gainesville at some point, just in the thought of being a safe place, it reminded me of Dreykus going and getting Michael Young at Interconnect. Mm-hmm. And how he was so kind of skittish at first, because, you know, you guys know Michael's been through a lot. But then we just opened our arms and loved him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was like those couple days while he was there hanging out with us. Just all that stuff was kind of gone, for a short time. And then, of course, he fell back into some of that again. But he's contacted me recently and wanted to talk some.
Yeah,
cool.
he
knows it's still a safe place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, he had even testified like at Interconnect, where when I was about to leave, he's like, I just want to say this. He's like, it's nice being around you guys, because in the world, I gotta be defensive because everybody's trying to stab me in the back. He's like, but I just felt so safe.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and to go from that to just being with all of us, with nothing to distinguish him, you know, as a sinner or something like that, and he's singing to the Lord and just all kinds of stuff.
Getting anointed as Jesus.
Yeah.
Amen, Lord. Thank you.
Just remember, Josh, when you come back, your job is secure in here.
Yeah, he gave a month and a half notice.
Right. That's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Right.
He didn't burn no bridge.
Right. We'll give you a good reference.
Only three, though.
Do you know what day you're leaving, Josh? Like what?
The week of Good Friday. Mm-hmm. I'm planning on hopefully either setting a more date or doing something in the week after Easter, so the week of Easter.
All right, so I guess I just gotta say it now too. A couple of weekends ago, after talking to my parents, it hit a really strong impression that it was time for me to head back to Oregon. And so I kind of discussed it with a few people and, you know, made sure I wasn't doing anything rashly. And so I'm actually gonna be heading back to Oregon at the end of the month. Moving back there for the foreseeable future, just to be with my parents and just be there for them and support them in whatever ways needed, and just help share the Lord and be Jesus in a really difficult time with my family. So I've already put in my 2 weeks notice at work, and they were incredibly supportive and said basically whenever I got back in town I could get in touch with them and they'd hire me back if they could. And so it was just kind of sudden and out of the blue. It was just like, that's where I need to be right now. So figured might as well just get that out there now as well. So,
John, you show up and everybody leaves the church.
There you go.
Crap, man.
All right. Anyone
else? Safety.
Yeah, right. All right. Anyone else leaving?
This meeting, good Lord.
Well, I'll be leaving. But I may be back.
Anybody else leaving? Yeah.
The beautiful thing is though, like, we're connected still.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Kim has to move.
The church is leaving. According to this, yeah. Tent and an altar.
We are definitely the tent church.
I was thinking, our last brother's meeting. I'm glad you said that, Kim. With Joshua and Mark's situation, how Russell was reading from Revelations, but it was just talking about, like, you know, essentially him getting all the glory and his glory being throughout the whole world. Mm-hmm. And I just had a huge impression. It's fact, obviously, but that the Lord is going to be glorified in Oregon. Mm-hmm. And he's going to be glorified in Ohio for my brothers. Mm-hmm. And and just like when one of us is at work or in a grocery store, we're expressing the whole body. It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And talk about being a safe place. You know? Mm-hmm. You getting to go and, like, literally wash your dad's feet, you know, mm-hmm. and just be there for him. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Mark, please, like, let us know, you know, if there's things that we can pray for or ways that we can help bear with you, like, while you're there, you know? Like, I know that you can get much further than where you're going to be. But you know what I mean? Like, don't think that when you go up there that, like, you're all alone and going through that, you know? That, like, we can pray for you or speak life to you or truth to you and to your family, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So
FedEx things,
don't be a stranger. Mm-hmm. That's the hardest thing too when you're going through something, is to be able to say, like, hey, I'm struggling, or, like, you know, or that you don't have to go and be the strong one, like, the Lord's going to be your strength.
Yeah.
You know,
that's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. So we'd love to walk through with you.
Now that's transparent.
Walk through you?
Walk through you.
Mark has high aspirations.
Talk about lowering your expectations. Holy crap.
Thanks, yeah.
You know, you tend to be pretty quiet, and so I would echo what Megan said. Just don't feel bad about reaching out, because we actually want to hear, even though it's tough, and it's, you know, we want to hear about it. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be cut off.
Yeah. So. It has been always hard for me to keep in touch with people over long distances, but I'm going to be very intentional, as intentional as possible.
We'll just rotate setting alarms.
Yeah, that's good. I can't get it out of my head, brother, when you blued yourself. Like, it's just ringing in my vision.
I know that was a pretty scary day for you, along with David's mustache.
Oh my God.
That's gorgeous. Scary day.
Nigel.
Well, I'm sitting right in the middle.
What's wrong with his mustache?
No comment, brother. We will keep you with a clean conscience here.
Okay.
My favorite's the one with him in the Christmas sweater.
Chevy Chase said in one of his movies to Goldie Hawn, he said, I tried to grow a mustache, but it fell off.
I keep trying. I'm glad it's not working.
It's because Joel's praying for it to fall off.
Right.
Yeah, it was pretty neat today. I was just going to get groceries, and I got to witness a miracle. And I was